Welcome to Tech Life Stories, sponsored by talent staffing firm Russell King Associates. My name is Khan Azmi and I'm your host. You will find me posting daily on LinkedIn, so connect with me there for more about the crazy world of technology. I have spent the past 25 years talking to tech leaders, so we will go behind the scenes each week, taking a deep dive into interviewing tech leaders to understand their journey from when they started to where they are today. I'll be finding out more about why they got into tech, discussing their work history, some of the projects they've been part of, some of the most influential people in their career, and much more. We produce a weekly show which is available every Monday at 6 a.m, just in time to start your week in the right way. And the podcast will be available on all platforms, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. If you prefer to see us visually, you can also find us on YouTube channel, Tech Life Stories. So remember, it's not what people think of you when you first start, it's what people think of you when you finish. Welcome to Tech Life Stories. I'm joined today by Indy Bamba, who has over 20 years experience in IT. He's worked his way up from doing first line support into now a service desk management role. He currently manages a team of six at CoStar, which is a global data provider for the commercial real estate sector. He's previously worked for the likes of Brunswick Group. He's ITIL certified and he has a bachelor's degree in business information technology from the London South Bank University. Indy, have I summed you up correctly?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right, Con. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
That's okay, no worries. I failed to mention a personal item, which is we both share the love of the same football team, Liverpool.
Indeed we do, and yeah, we're both passionate about our club, and obviously when we first met, Con, yeah, obviously we hit it off straight away. Obviously that was one of the main talking points. We got on so well due to the fact that we support the same team, and yeah, that's... it's a great club to support.
It is, 100%. You'll never walk alone, as they say. And as you know, me and you could talk about Liverpool and football for hours on end. So we'll save that for another time. Good. Okay. So look, I want to start with why you got into technology. You know, you've been in the industry now for 20 years. Not everyone sticks at the industry for that long. So what made you get into it?
So yes, obviously I was growing up, obviously going through education and obviously was studying, and around my time it was kind of like IT was a kind of in thing, I guess. There was a big boom around IT computers, and yeah, kind of around the time obviously I had an interest in computers, and yeah, I just thought it was the right path to follow. So obviously done my academics, went into college where I studied business, computer studies, BTEC National in computer studies, and then I went on to obviously do my degree in business information technology. So obviously based on what I'd studied, I thought obviously the natural path would be to go into IT. It's an area that I really enjoy working in, because no day is the same. Every day presents different challenges, opportunities, and yeah, like, I've obviously done 20 plus years in it, and I thoroughly enjoy it.
Good. I'm glad to hear you still enjoy it. That's not everyone's thought process. But cast your mind back to when you first got into it. You know, you would have started off, you know, in a kind of like service desk, service management type role, you know, at a junior end. Did you have a goal then? Did you know that you wanted to kind of get to like service desk manager level, or did you think you were going to go down a different career path at that stage?
Yeah, very good question. I believe, well, but obviously first it was just about getting into an IT role, and obviously the kind of entry level in coming out of university, the typical first job would be like a support role, right? So sort of first line support. So a lot of my sort of earlier career was kind of like first, second line support roles, and I never really at that time thought I would get to where I am now. It was kind of like, yeah, this is what I want to do. Let me see where it leads me. And then, yeah, just the way my path's kind of planned out, I've kind of ended up going down service management. Yeah, I think looking back, I probably would not have seen myself here where I am now. But I guess just for the journey you take, the opportunities you get, I'm here where I am now. So I'll be honest, thinking back, I probably didn't think I'd ever be a manager, an IT manager. I never ever thought I'd be that, but I'm here, thoroughly enjoy it and the rewards that it brings. And yeah, I think... just the journey kind of takes you to where you're going to go, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's the same story for a lot of individuals. I think, especially getting into the support arena of IT initially, Maybe being young and naive and not thinking management's going to be right for you. But I think generally as life progresses and you pick up experience and skill sets, you can utilise those as a manager, right? And I'm sure you've had some good and bad managers over the years. And let's stay on that subject because you gave me a big nod then. So let's start with some good managers. Like, what would you say have been some really good managers? You don't have to tell me names, but what are the key kind of traits you've picked from those good managers that you've now implemented into your management style?
Yeah, very good question. Obviously, as you work in different environments and companies, you get to work with many different people, how they operate, how they obviously manage their teams, how they communicate, all those kind of stuff a leader does. The best ones, I guess, without naming names, I've worked with leaders who are like, the kind of leader I like to work with, the one who's kind of like, they kind of communicate to you openly, transparently. They give you the confidence to just go out there and perform, and they give you opportunities, not just because they just give you opportunities, but you've got to earn the opportunities. But they have trust in you and they have faith in you. And I think, like in one of my roles when I was working at Brunswick Group, which I spent quite a lot of my career in, sort of around 10 years, I worked in an environment where my leader, my director, he's like a huge role model for me even now. Even though I'm not working at Brunswick Group now, he's still somebody who I take advice from, someone who I look up to, because his leadership skills were to be admired. He's calm, he's a great communicator, he had empathy, he'd invest in you, he'd always take time to listen to you. And I always found that he was a leader that I want to be like him.
Yeah.
And my management style is kind of modeled around him and how he is, how he treats people, how he makes you feel, how he wants to invest and develop you. And that's the kind of message I give to my team, and try to coach them, guide them, and give them opportunities for those obviously who deserve it. And it's the style, because I know a lot of people might think manager, like, you've got to be firm, you've got to be like very assertive. I do, yeah, sometimes of course you have to be assertive when someone's not performing or not doing what they should. Of course you have to be, you might have to put your foot down, but ultimately I responded to people, I just kind of let you get on with the job. They trust you, they put their faith in you, and they've got confidence in you. And I think that's what I try to do with my team. So I think that's why I'd say the best managers are the ones that kind of just, they let you just perform. They give you the confidence to go out there and perform.
I can see a lot of passion coming out of you then, which I've never, not that I haven't seen before, but yeah, you kind of went into one there, which I really enjoyed seeing. Would you say then, some of them maybe, let's not call them bad managers, but managers that maybe you haven't taken some of their skill set traits into your management style, what would you say you didn't like about some of those individuals? Not didn't like about them, but about their management styles?
I think anybody, right? If you put yourself, I've worked under managers who just let you perform, let it go out and do your thing. They coach you, they mentor you when you've done things wrong. Yeah, of course you want constructive feedback and when you're not doing something good, you need to be told. But the bad managers, I guess I've worked with, are kind of like the micromanagement type style, where they always breathing down your neck. They're always checking what you're doing. They're always, it's just like, sometimes I just feel like, I don't know, it just, when I've worked with those type of managers, I've just found that the morale around the camp isn't as good as in, say, when you've got the opposite manager, where you just see people excelling and expressing, where when you work in an environment where the manager is always very micromanaging and very, always picking out your fault, like the team's faults, or doesn't really praise you as much. I find working under that kind of manager, I think the output isn't as good as it probably could be, just purely because of the kind of environment it creates. So I've obviously taken things from those kind of people that have a micromanagement type of approach, but I learn from different people. I've learned good things and bad things from the good ones, good and bad things from the bad ones. So I'm somebody who takes that away. And I always think there's something to gain from it. I don't think there's anything negative. You always learn from different experiences. I think it helps make you a better manager as well. Take things from each type of person, each type of style. And I think you're always looking, I think that helps you develop further as a manager as well.
100%. I do agree with you there. I think I'm going to throw a caveat in a little bit, and maybe it's more suited to my industry. So when I first got into the recruitment industry, for my sins, 25 years ago, I had a micromanager. And looking back at it now, I was a 19-year-old who probably needed a micromanager at that time. I didn't really know. I was young. I didn't really know what I was doing. I needed someone to kind of really manage me and manage my output as best as possible. I suppose once I had a couple of years of really good experience under me, I probably needed that micromanager to let go of the reins a little bit, because I could kind of do it a little bit more. So do you think there's a place for maybe micromanagement, maybe more at the beginning of your career, to help you develop? Oh, sorry. I was saying, do you think there's a place for micromanagement at the beginning of someone's career, maybe, like I was as a junior, not necessarily full on micromanagement, but a little bit more hand-holding at the beginning?
Lila, I think when you first start your first roles, right, I guess you're probably going to get micromanaged probably a bit more, because you're still raw, you're still learning, you probably make more mistakes when you're younger in your first role, second role, you're probably still learning, you're finding your feet. I think you probably do have to micromanage when someone, when you've given somebody all the tools, the platforms, the knowledge, the coaching, the training, and they're still not doing the things that you want. I think sometimes you do have to have that approach of to micromanage on certain parts of what they're doing. I think you've got to know when to kind of apply that kind of method, that theory. Yeah. I think you've got to be a good manager and know when to do that and when not to do that. And for me, I've always found that I think I've responded more to those managers who just kind of have that trust, like that belief and confidence in you, because they trust you. When you've got that trust, you almost know that I'm going to go away, I'm going to make sure I do this properly. You almost want to do it better for somebody who's like that, as opposed to someone who's telling you constantly, micromanaging. You're probably not going to go, I want to do it fully, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
I've always found that, you have to micromanage when you have to, but again, in my opinion, if you're a good manager, a good coach, you've got all the right, you're training your staff the right way, you shouldn't really have to micromanage anyone, in my opinion.
You should be able to trust them and let them flourish in the role, right?
Yeah, 100%. But provided you've given them the tools, the training, the knowledge, everything they need to be a success, as long as you've done that, then in my opinion, they should be able to go away and just run with it and just do the role, do what's expected. But when you're giving them all that and they're still not doing it, then obviously you've got to look at different avenues around micromanagement, performance, whatever it may be.
Yeah, okay. All right, that makes sense. When you first got into your first kind of team lead management role, how did that happen? Because not everyone gets that opportunity. Some people want to move into that or take that next step, but they don't get the opportunity. So how did that happen for you, and what advice would you give for those wanting to take that next step?
Yeah. So I remember when I was at Brunswick Group, I was initially like first, second line support engineer. And then obviously I was doing really good at my job. I was a really good support engineer. I was very popular with the business, supporting the employees. And obviously I had good knowledge. And I had to show that I wanted more. I had to kind of step up above the rest of the team. If I want to progress, what's going to make me stand out above my team, who are very good engineers as well? Because when the opportunities come, I used to think, I want to be first in line when the opportunity comes. And how do you do that? I've spoken to my manager, my director, like taking advice, because I've never been in that position before. So I'm listening to good people who are experienced people, like role models, who are like kind of telling me, this is what you need to do, this is how you got to do it. And I remember taking that advice on board, and yeah, and I was obviously like, so I took the advice, I started doing things like in the role that were not part of my job description. I started doing additional responsibilities on my own accord.
Yeah.
And when I started taking that and I started stepping up above my competitors, I think obviously senior management saw that, like, this guy's stepping up, he's doing more. And almost like the promotion was a formality. And it was like, look, you're showing it, you're demonstrating it, and there was a requirement for it. And yeah, I got the role. So I went into from sort of, first, I was like a team of five engineers. I now became their team lead. So I had to, like, it was a step change. I was doing the same things they were doing, but now I've got additional responsibilities. So there was some obviously coaching I had to do, some training, but ultimately I just stepped up when I had to, and I just, because I really wanted the opportunity. And if you demonstrate that in your role, I think the title, the promotion, all that good reward stuff comes if you show it. You've got to show it to the people around you what you're doing, and that's exactly what I did.
It's good. Out of interest, when you first made that step up, you were effectively the same level as your team, and then you were their team leader. How was that transition? How did they feel about that? Because that probably felt weird for them a little bit.
It really did, and I think it's a difficult step to take. But at the same time, you have to show them, like, look, you've got to show that kind of, not authority, but you've got to kind of show them, like, look, you got to show them that step change, that you have got into a different role now. How do you do that? You got to, sometimes you just got to, like, look, I'll give you an example, like, little thing, subtle thing, like from wearing a typical shirt and trousers, or whatever, I started wearing a suit just to look a bit, I show that I'm something different now.
Yeah.
And sometimes you've got to start having different type of conversation with the people that were kind of like putting your pals. You got to sometimes have difficult conversations. Like, you got to tell them when they're not doing something. Ultimately, it's a difficult thing to do when you're working with people who are so close with you, you've worked many years with. But ultimately, I just said to myself, look, this, I need to show the people that put their faith in me that I can do this. So you just got to do the role, and you got to just have confidence, belief to just go out there and do the job you're meant to do. And that's exactly what I did. So I just, like, showed, then I started implementing little things like different team meetings or different little things I've implemented to like show that, yeah, this person is in charge, or this is our lead now. So you got to build that up with time. It doesn't happen instantly, but you got to start, you got to have a plan in terms of, like, these people are going to follow me. And how you do that, I think you just got to be open communication, talk to your staff regularly, one-to-ones, tell them what they're doing good, but also tell them what they're not doing so good, and to try and improve them. And that's exactly what I've done since I've been a lead, going into management. I've always put, the biggest thing I've always done is I like investing in my people, the good people who want to, that's what gives me the biggest joy, giving them, what can I do to help them reach their potential? I think that's why I enjoy what I do the most.
Yeah, I would say, from my experience as well, the best managers are those that put their team first. It's not them first, right? Your team are representing you as the manager. And if you invest in them, they will only replicate what you want them to be on, you know, from your team. I think some individuals, particularly some managers that I've had in the past, have just wanted the title and have not wanted not wanted to deal with the responsibility, not wanting to deal with some difficult individuals, some characters. What do you think makes the difference between, like you were saying, you as a really good manager compared to those that just want a title, maybe a bit of a promotion or a salary increase, etc., but aren't necessarily as keen on managing the team the right way?
Yeah, I mean, look, everyone wants the good things, right? Everyone wants reward. Everyone wants to I would hope people want to, you get different types of people in the working environment. You get some people happy just doing what they're doing. They come in to do a job, they're happy to do that job, and they don't want more, which is fine. If you're happy to do that, you do a good job as a manager, fantastic, fine. But then you get those who probably want to go in there for the wrong reasons. They're going into management, yeah, so they want more reward, etc., but deep down they don't want to do it, maybe, but they're just doing it for the sake of the things that we all want, right? More money and recognition. I think you get better output when you really want to do it. I think that's the difference with me. I didn't see myself doing it, but then the more I kind of got into it, seeing people who I coached, mentored, go into promotions, going into different teams, it's that satisfaction side for me. Like, and I think it's because I want to do this. This is what I enjoy doing. I think because I've got that within me, it makes me do my job better.
Yeah.
I think if you're in it, if you haven't got it in, you're just doing it for the sake of, then I guess you're still going to probably do the job to a certain standard, but is it going to be that one step above? I don't know. Maybe sometimes it is, maybe sometimes it isn't. But with me, it's genuine. It's like, I want to help people get better, develop, and I want them to go and I want them to progress. I don't want them to be like staying in first line support, second line support.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I want them to push them into different teams. What can I do to coach you to get there? How can I help you? And that's what I'm doing now in my current role. That's what I did in my previous roles, and that's what gives me the biggest satisfaction.
Yeah, no, it's good, really good. You mentioned when you first got involved, did you get training around how to manage, and or have you had proper training around that, or has it been more just learning on the job from your managers?
Yeah, so when I went into team lead, my first team lead, but it was kind of a lot of it was learning on the job, sort of just doing it on the job. And then as I, when I took the step to service desk manager at Brunswick, when I went from team lead to actual service desk manager, yeah, I went on a management course through a company of his called Butte Training. So basically a lovely lady called Margot Manning, fantastic coach. She does like really great courses around sort of leadership, management, what, how to be a good manager, how to like manage your team, all that kind of good stuff. Mm-hmm. And she was a, I was fortunate. I went on a course with, it was a reward for the good work I was doing. So this course wasn't just given to anyone. It was literally, you went on it because you were, you deserved it. And I was on that course, and I think it was like every week, was it once a week or twice a week? Sometimes we'd, yeah, it would just be various modules around different aspects of management. And I was, I think that training was very beneficial and kind of made me see things in a different way to how I saw it before. When you had that professional training or professional coach telling you, and you're seeing things from a different angle. And I think to be a really good manager, I think you need to have a open mindset, and you've got to know how to think, because you're dealing with so many different types of people, different learning styles. You got, and I think that training just made me manage people better in terms of like how to listen to people better, how to communicate better, how to handle situations better. And all that theory I learnt, the key part was applying it. You've got to apply it in your role. No point doing the theory and you're not doing all that good best practice stuff, because I think the real value is learning, doing the course, but going away and applying it and showing results, showing how the things you're doing are making the team better. And the, and I think that's somewhere where I really benefited from.
So, Indy, I mentioned that you've received training when you was at Brunswick, management training. Have you gone on any additional kind of training courses around management at all?
Not official management training since I was had the one at Brunswick. I am currently looking to do, looking to evolve myself further. I want to, because I obviously do a lot, quite, my current role, I'm doing quite a lot of projects. So looking to study either Agile or Prince 2 this year. I've done obviously ITIL, but management-wise, that was the last management course I did. Obviously, since I did the training, probably do need to go on a refresher soon, but I need to obviously see what's available. But in answer to the question, I haven't had any managed that specific training since the one I had at Brunswick.
Okay, so the Brunswick one has been the one that's kind of like stuck with you and the one you've implemented throughout your career. Okay, so when you was the service desk team leader at Brunswick, when did you get that official kind of promotion to a service desk manager, and how did that come about? Was it literally someone just left and you stepped up, or you know, how did it all come about?
Yeah, so what it was, there was a, so my manager, my previous manager, she went on maternity leave, so I was kind of the, I was a team lead then, she went on maternity leave, and I thought at the time I was going to get the management role then, but my manager and the director, they thought I wasn't quite ready for that level of responsibility then at that point, because I kind of had been doing team lead for about just over a year. So I think they probably thought it came a bit too soon. But I obviously felt that, yeah, I probably deserved it then. But then looking back, so they hired a contractor for a year to come in, just to, who's very experienced, someone who like proper loads of years of experience to kind of transform some of the processes around the service desk. So I worked closely with him for about a year. And after that, I was worthy of, and I was ready to take on the role full time. So in that period, I worked with him, I worked with my manager, to kind of like to say, look, I did the things I had to do. And yeah, and after that, looking back now, I think it was the right thing to do. I think I was fortunate that I had that year to work with that consultant, with my manager. I think that gave me a really good platform. When I took the role, I was like, I felt really ready to do it. And I think I was very fortunate at the time to get the opportunity I got. But at the same time, it was a measure of the work I'd put in, and it was reward. It wasn't just given to me for the sake of, but it was, I earned the right to get that role.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. That consultant that came in for that year, obviously at the beginning it was a different voice, maybe a different method, I don't know, but what did you learn from that consultant that came in? Because obviously you were so used to dealing with what you had previously.
So what I learned, and this is one of the valuable lessons I've learned, is obviously Brunswick, a lot of the people at Brunswick, a lot of the leaders, people that have been there promoted, they'd been there like many years. So they had all that institutional knowledge, they'd gone through the ranks. So you had kind of like everyone working the Brunswick way. I think I was working the Brunswick way. But when I worked with the consultant, he's somebody who'd come from the outside. He was external. He didn't know Brunswick. So he came in, brought a lot to the table, which was stuff from the outside, seeing things differently to how we saw it. So the way my mind is, I'm obviously very flexible. I kind of took into on board what he was saying. Because what I used to find interesting was when he was, there'll be certain things you just do because it was a Brunswick way, but he would not agree with it. Like, why are you doing this? This ain't the best way to do something. But then obviously we're saying that this is how we've always done it at Brunswick. So it's kind of like he used to always, not struggle, but when we, certain things we used to do, in his mind, we're like, this isn't the best way of doing it. This is not the industry best practice way of doing it, but the Brunswick way was the right way. So I think he kind of struggled with adapting to working how we worked. But I learned from him. I learned a lot of things around what is the best way to do something. What do you tell me what we're doing here? So I was always asking him questions, and he'd explain. And I felt that was really good for my development in terms of like understanding someone who's so experienced, who's worked in many environments, just to see why he's saying some of the things he's saying. Like, what makes you think what you're saying is the right way? Why is this the wrong way? So I would question a lot of things. And I'm always asking questions. So it was really beneficial for me because it was kind of like it was a two-way thing. I was helping him and he was helping me. I'd tell him how Brunswick do things and why they do it a certain way. And he would tell me why there's a better way of doing things. And I just found it was a really, really good two-way communication between me and him, where we just kind of just learned off each other. And I think that was really beneficial for me in terms of like how I developed and how I grew into that role as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting hearing that there are different best practices or best industry practices across various different organisations. And I think a lot of maybe larger corporates do get institutionalised around what they think is the best. And sometimes it does need an outside view to maybe just give you a different opinion and a different voice sometimes. And that sounds like what happened in your circumstance. But I also think it's probably a really good learning curve for you to make you think about maybe there are other ways and methods that you can go about solving solutions that come up on a day-to-day basis, right?
100%. And obviously I'm talking about the Brunswick example there, but since I left Brunswick, I've had a couple of other jobs. I've probably been that consultant in a way where I've come in with, from the outside with all these different ways and views, and I've come into like my current role, and I'm thinking like, why do we do this certain way? And it's like it's always been done that way. And I look at it and I think there's a better way of doing this. And so I've kind of come to the other side of the extreme. But at the same time, I've had to adapt. I'm not one of these people that, oh no, this is the only way to do it. I'm very flexible. So I try and bring what I've got. I try to bring it to the table. I try to present it to the people in the right way. And I have implemented many positive changes. So, I feel it's pros and cons. I feel like when you work in a company for so long, you do become kind of institutionalized. You only think that's the right way or the best way of doing something because that's the only way you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think me having left Brunswick, going into different environments, I've learned how other companies do things, and for my development, for me managing, it's been very, very rewarding. So what I'm learning is that every company's got its own culture, it's got its own way of doing things, and you just got to respect that and you just got to work with it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I know you mentioned your current organization, CoStar. I mean, let's stay on that at the moment because it's where I know you from. So I think you're managing a team of six at the moment, is that right, on the service desk?
Yeah, seven now, because we've just inherited another engineer as part of an acquisition. So it was initially six, but now it's seven.
Okay. Just talk me through maybe some of the differences between Brunswick and CoStar. Not to put anyone down, but just the differences in their styles and maybe the culture and how they differ and maybe how you've had to adapt to that. We interrupt this podcast to mention our sponsors, tech talent staffing firm Russell King Associates. If you're looking for work or looking for your next hire, please head to their website and register your interest at russellkingassociates.com. Right, back to the show.
Yeah, so I think culture of the business is very important. I think to be a success, you've got to kind of understand the culture of a business, how it operates. You've got to absorb that in. I think Brunswick's culture was very... It was like work hard, play hard, but I worked at Brunswick for obviously many years and I saw it transition and grow very through like the course of 9 years. Like when I first joined to what it became, I saw this kind of company organically growing. So I worked through a lot of transition and change there. CoStar is, the culture is very, it's a different culture. Like here it's very like, they just want you to get stuff done. The motto is just get it done. Whatever you need to do, just get it done. But here at CoStar, when I first came in, like settled in, like previous companies I'd worked, I'd say Brunswick, like if you're working on a project, there'll be a project manager who you work with, you'd contribute. Or if there was a refresh project, whatever it may be, you'd work with a project, or you might be the project manager for it, but most often than not, there would be a project manager who would deal with all the management of it. CoStar is very different. They don't believe in project managers, for example. So they like, the manager just is the project manager. So it's almost like they don't hire project managers here. They don't believe in it, almost. So that's just their way. Yeah. It's just their culture. It's different. They just want managers to do, like, juggle the lot. Me coming from the outside, I struggled. I had to come to terms with, okay, is this the best way of doing it? Mm-hmm. Questioned a lot of things, but... You get to a point where it's coming from the top that this is how we operate. Yeah. So I'm having to just take that into my thoughts and obviously just work with it, and I have. And but it's just different cultures, it's how they operate, how they do things. And it's just some things you're going to agree with, some you're not. I guess that's going to be the case in any company you're going to go to. There'll be things that you agree with, some things that you just think, nah, why do they do it that way? But I think in each experience, you're going to learn something and gain.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree with that. I think every organisation is different in their culture and their outlook, their vision, their mission. No two companies are the same, right? I think you mentioned previously that lots of projects going on at the moment at CoStar. So does that mean that remit sits with you as the manager?
Yes. So obviously recently we've had quite a few projects on the go since I joined. So like, I think we initially joined the company. Obviously there's a lot to learn about the company, its processes, how they operate, etc. So then in between your kind of day job of managing the team or the tickets and all that kind of good stuff you normally do, you have to manage big projects. They're not small projects. They're like, to give you one example, but we had to work on a project to upgrade, just recently as it goes, as part of an acquisition, 150 laptops as part of an acquisition. That's a big project. There's a lot of work involved around planning, organizing, coordinating, refreshing, building machines. There was a lot of fact finding. There's a lot of work involved. And that's in another company that would have been dedicated to a project manager, someone would have dealt with it, and I probably wouldn't have been involved in it as much. Mm-hmm. But CoStar, I've been the owner.
Yeah.
I've had the project assigned to me, so I had to get all the employees into an office, get all the desks set up, get all the laptops built, training, coach, all of that stuff. So obviously I was obviously owning the project, but obviously I had a great team around me who were helping me, but we're having to do it whilst trying to do the day job.
So we
had to juggle it. I found it, I wouldn't say difficult, but I think a lot of even the team would probably say this. It was a lot to take, it was a lot to do. And I obviously raised concerns, but I raised things like, look, could we get this in? Could we get a contractor? Or could I just trying to things to take some of the load off the team? But CoStar message, they don't do contractors. No, we just got to get it done. We just got to juggle it all. And that's just the motto, culture of the business. So we just have to find a way to do it. And we did. And we're literally now at a point where the project's almost complete. Employees are in the office. They're on their new CoStar laptops. We've done a migration project from their email and their files. Now we're almost about to wrap the project up. So it does feel really rewarding. But when you're looking back and thinking the lessons learned, there's a lot of things you could have done pretty better, improved. But like anything, you always learn from the experience, and gave me great satisfaction knowing that we're at the point we're at now where we've acquired a company and we've got them integrated into our system. And I've learned a lot from just doing this particular project in itself.
Yeah. Really interesting hearing you talk about the current setup. Would you say having those additional kind of like project management type responsibilities, and we'll talk about those skill sets in a minute and what that means to you, but does that have an effect on the running of the service? Is it a detriment, or is it just, you know, once we've got everything done ticket wise on a service desk, we then look at the project? You know, how do you manage that time?
Very good question. So you have to obviously manage, you have to delegate, you have to organize, plan, resource, all the good things a manager would do. And yeah, you sort of get stuck in, and you got to just like, well, you're delegate, you're just like, you're doing this, you're doing that. But the service desk is obviously, it's a busy service desk, so you're getting tickets coming in, which is a major outage that generates, it's like obviously quite really busy periods. And yeah, I think how we kind of manage it, like, we just had to resource and plan the team, like, okay, you're going to be doing this during this time, but just have to like just organize, like, look. And then I had to make sure I gave my agents the time when they needed the time to perform the upgrade, to swap out somebody to a new laptop. And I think, yeah, just resourcing, planning, organizing, communicating, all these great skills you need, I think I had to apply it. And I had to kind of just in a very fast-paced environment, because it was quite relentless, because it was quite a demanding project, because people were working around people's schedules. People were only on a certain day, or we had like a conference happening. There's gonna be like 50 people in the office. So we're kind of like, it was quite full on, but at the same time, many great skills and things we learned, like as a team, just resilience, communicating, coordinating, talking to each other. Really, just, I think the team just got closer and closer as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think what stood out to me there was, well, I'm thinking of my listeners that are listening at the moment. Some of them are going to be in the camp of, do you know what, the more responsibility you get, the better, and you get your hands dirty. Some will probably be on the more mindset of, no, the service desk should be the service desk. That is its core function, its role. So I think you've got two kind of camps there. Obviously, you've had both camps. I'm not going to ask you which one you prefer, because I think it would do an injustice to your previous employers. But I think it's very interesting knowing that there are different mindsets and different ways of working within organisations, and you need to adapt to that way, right? Because let's be honest with you as well, even if you had interviewed for one of those organisations and it was a certain way to begin with, there may then at some stage be someone that comes in totally above you that changes the whole landscape of that. So I think you really need to learn to adapt to the environment. And I think you've done that, right? Am I right in saying so? Would you sum that out correctly?
100% I've had to adapt, because like I said, I've worked in different environments who work a certain way, and which probably align more with how I work. CoStar's probably been different, because it's not in a bad way, it's just how they work. And but you, to be a success in that, you have to be adaptable, you have to be flexible, you have to be, and I feel it just comes down to attitude. You gotta just be, I've got to learn a new way. And that's what I said to myself. Whether I agree with it or not, I have to adapt to it. Yeah. They're not gonna change for me. They've been doing it for X amount of years this way. And it's probably just worked. That's why it's probably worked so long. But yeah, I think from my side, look, I've brought things in that are positive and good, and that have gone out to the global service desk, and with process improvements and all that good stuff. But I think, yeah, I've definitely had to probably adapt more here than I have at, I'll say, my last roles.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of person I am, my attitude, my approach is, yeah, I'm going to do what I need to do to make it a success. And that is exactly what I do.
Good, good. I mean, look, you've touched on obviously projects you worked on, obviously managing the service desk. You touched on their process improvement. What other kind of like key kind of skill sets does someone of your stature as a service desk manager, you know, what things have you implemented or changed that have had a major impact on the service desk?
Yeah, so one that probably stands out the most here is when we had to, sort of, there was a big breach in America, I think, in, was it the MGM, like the casino operator, I think they got hacked, and I think they got compromised. I think basically someone called their service desk, managed to get in with 2FA and basically hacked into their systems. And obviously it was a big news in America, obviously we're a CoStar's American company, huge news. So I was tasked with myself and a service desk manager in the US to, we had to implement a new layer of security and put a new process in place to secure up, where basically that included ID validation. So I wrote up a process to, so when people called up, there's certain protocols you had to follow. You have to obviously, first step would be like, look, you're trying to get them to reset their own 2FA password or whatever it may be. If you're unable to do that, because obviously they say, we're like a global 5,000 plus company. If someone calls from America and the UK, we've never seen that person, like, we don't know who they are.
Yeah.
So you don't know who's on the other end of the phone. So we added another layer of security whereby if they couldn't self-reset their password or their 2FA, they'd have to go through ID validation over MS Teams. So what they would have to do would say, look, we need to ID validate you. The person I'm speaking to is actually that person. And there was various protocols I had to document and implement, and obviously I had to coach, train the service desk. So obviously the knowledge articles, we had to do global training sessions. This is a new process. Had to get it signed off from security, my manager, manager of the US. But yeah, so when we implemented that process, we added a layer of security that was not there before. So basically now we've got a full process whereby we can evidence in relation to all our audits, that we're following the process for one, but we made it more secure, the environment, in terms of, look at the tickets now, when someone's called up for a password reset, you can see you have to put screenshots into the ticket that the call took place. So there's got to be evidence that what you're saying actually happened. And it's audited, and it gave me a lot of satisfaction because there's obviously such an important process. And we had to kind of turn it around pretty quick. So once I kind of understood like what the key things were that were needed, I went away and documented it all up, a lot of drafts back and forth, but then got it to a point where the whole global service desk is using it now.
That's good.
And
that's good.
It's made it a secure environment, security team's happy, wire manager's happy, and everyone's like, I don't know if it's going to be the solution going forward this way, but at the point, we took action.
Yeah.
We were reactive and we were proactive in terms of, like, well, we don't want this happening to us. What can we do to make it more secure? Mm-hmm. So obviously working with security team, all the different people involved, but I actually documented up the whole process myself and wrote it, and then I did the training session globally for all the agents. This is the process. This is how you log a ticket. This is the actions. I think implementing that was, for me so far in my time at CoStar, I've been the one I could think about. I think that was a really big one.
Sound like you're very proud of your own achievement there, which I like.
especially because of the value of what it was. Like, security is a huge thing, right?
100%. Especially for a large global organization with 5,000 plus users, right? So I think it's really interesting what you said about the documentation side, because when I hear about the documentation side, to me it doesn't sound like it's an exciting part of the job, but it's so necessary in what you're doing, especially around the training part for the rest of the services. When you're writing, when you're documenting something like that, how much documentation is there exactly? Or, you know, will it vary? I mean, let's talk about the project you were just talking about there.
Yeah, look, documentation, yeah, agreed. It's probably not the most exciting part of the role, but it's an important part. And having accurate documentation, knowledge, process, all that kind of, because you need that for consistency on the service desk. You need clear processes around what the process is, why it's important, what you need to do, the actions. And I think, obviously, having good process will drive consistency, right, to the service levels. If everyone's doing, following the processes consistently, everyone, we're consistent. It's when there's not good process or it's not properly documented, then you get inconsistencies, yeah, where somebody does it one way, someone might do it another way, that person thinks you've got to do it this way. But when you have a process and you coach and train your staff, this is how you do it, this is what you need to do, that will drive a consistent service level. And I think CoStar's big on documentation. Brunswick was pretty fairly okay with documentation, got to a good space there with that. But CoStar's huge on document. Everything you almost do, you have to document it. So you've got to, like, it's very big on knowledge, developing the knowledge base, contributing to the knowledge base. And yeah, I mean, for anyone new coming into the CoStar service, there's most of the answers are probably in that knowledge base that they need. Yeah. So yeah, it helps us. The win benefit is, and it's in there. They've got a first point of contact to go to. Go and see if your answer's in that knowledge base first before you go and ask anyone else. So that's the kind of message we portray it. Log a ticket, get the details, check in there. If it's not there, then ask your manager or whoever you need to ask for guidance after that. But documentation, I think, is an important part of the role.
Yeah, another thing you mentioned was you rolled out globally the training for it. How do you do that? Do you just organise a Teams meeting and everyone just jumps on and you just talk through it? You know, how does that work exactly?
Yeah, so initially, a few steps, we publish it in our knowledge base that gets notified to all the services, and then we did Teams comms, emails, hi team, there's a new process coming in. You've got to obviously sell the why, because obviously they had been resetting it a certain way following the existing process, what it was before. Obviously changing a process, obviously some people are, we've got to do extra steps or whatever. You obviously get some people that grunt and groan a bit, but yeah, we kind of got it in. And yeah, the best way, we just got everyone on the Teams, can't remember if it's one session or a couple of sessions here, we got like everyone on a call, shared the screen, just went through the process. Here it is, this is how you find it, and this is why we're doing it, and we're going to go through it. Any questions, raise your hands, type in the chat. And then obviously you can train, you can do all of that, but then not only just that side of it, there was obviously the assurance, checking that people are doing what we're saying. So I set up a lot of queries on dashboards to check that people are actually doing what the process is stating. So I put in things on our ticketing system to track with reporting daily, or was it weekly checks, to see if anyone was flagging any tickets that weren't done correctly. So there's a lot of that. So there was obviously right out of the process, there was a training, did that globally through Teams calls. But then there's an assurance piece, and just making sure and checking that people are doing it. And I think, yeah, I ran with most of that process, and I think it's been a good big success here so far.
Good. And in regards to managing people, you mentioned there's seven. How do you keep seven happy service desk individuals in a global environment where they're not just dealing with service desk tickets, they're also working on various projects? It must be tough.
It is a tough ask. It's challenging, I'm not going to lie, but how do I keep them engaged on top of things? You've got to manage, right? You've got to just be there for them. We have regular one-to-ones. I listen a lot. I listen to my people, like what their frustrations, where they want to improve. And yeah, I think it's just a good manager. You've got to obviously just keep giving your team, you're their leader, right? You need to keep showing them that, look, reward the good work. Like if someone's done really good work, has been busy, yeah, you give them a reward. Like you take them out for a drink or a lunch or a team lunch. We've done a lot of like socials. I feel like it's a busy environment. How do you keep them happy? Look, you just got to keep telling them why and reiterating why it's important to do the job consistently well. I think, yeah, it's just presenting opportunities to people, like in the team, like when they're doing well, you give them opportunities, like you give them some additional responsibility. If you see someone's doing well, like, I'm going to give you this because you've done this well, I'm going to get you involved in this project, or I'm going to get you involved in this task because I think it's going to be good for your development. So I think that's how you kind of keep them engaged and happy. I think provided they feel like they're learning, I think it's a good thing. I think when I joined here, giving my kind of experience, how telling them how they need to improve and better themselves, I think obviously having me coming from externally was refreshing for them. So I think for me, keeping them happy, I think it's just, look, produce the goods, do your job to the best of your ability, show the results with your metrics and your performance, and look, I reward the good work. And I think when they see that, I think that's what keeps them engaged and happy.
Yeah, it's good, really good to hear. You touched on one-to-ones. And let's not just talk about CoStar. Let's talk about your career being a services man in general. But how often would you say a one-to-one is needed? How often do you do like a team huddle? Do you do, I don't know, quarterly, six-monthly, yearly kind of like performance development appraisal type reviews? You know, how do you like to operate as a manager to kind of like have that regular contact of your team?
Yes, so different companies, different ways, I guess. I think like, say, Brunswick, I would do like a once-a-week team meeting. Once a week, we get in a room, talk about, we go through stats, good things we've done, bad things, or things that didn't go so well, how do we avoid this going forward, lessons learned type stuff. Individual one-to-ones here, I tend to do them monthly because they're based around A1, just because it's busy, it's very hard to just dedicate time to one-to-ones. It's like you've got so much going on. So I kind of do once a month. And what I do in that month is basically we go through the month's metrics, some of the targets they've got in their appraisal which they need to meet. Yeah, we just go through stats, performance, how they're doing, are they meeting their targets, are they failing, talk, how can they improve. I think for me, what I get the output I need, because I'm regularly checking. If I need to act on something before, if I think I can't wait that long, obviously I'll just pause an off-the-cuff meeting, say, can we have a quick chat for a bit? I'll put in a quick half an hour and we'll just discuss it. But more often than not, monthly, go through the deliverables. Are you performing to the levels expected? What can you do to improve? And what do you need from me to help you get to that, to reach your goals? I think, yeah, for me, monthly works good here, but I have done it different frequencies in other companies.
Okay, and appraisals? How often do you do appraisals?
So CoStar do mid-year, so there'll be one. So the annual one is every February, sort of March time. We have the yearly one where you go through the year's performance, but then there'll be a mid-year one in July. And the mid-year is obviously to see the targets you've set them. Are they on track? Are they on court? Are they falling behind? And it's just kind of like seeing, are they on track to deliver what their goals are? So yeah, two in the year here. Most companies I've worked at pretty much been kind of, they have a mid-year and a four-year one. So I think that's kind of becoming, like, from what I've seen, kind of like normal across a lot of companies now.
Yeah. Okay, good. And then you spoke about there about talking through the stats, their goals, etc. What do you do if someone's not hitting their stats? They're not hitting their goals. They're, you know, they're missing the targets, the KPIs that you set for them. You know, those, there are difficult conversations that need to be had. Like, how do you act upon those?
Yeah, look, I think I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I'll give them a chance to fix things, improve. You have those conversations, like, this is where you need to improve, this is what's good, this is where you're not doing so good. You need to have those kind of difficult conversations. But then you get to a point where I always say to people, like, when you've kind of given them the training, you've given them the knowledge, you've sat down, you've told them where they need to improve, they keep making the same errors, mistakes, then you have to be firm, right? You've got to, like, to put people on PIPs, performance improvement plans. Mm-hmm. You've got to just look. I think you've got to be, at the end of the day, you've got to perform in your role. And if you're not doing what's expected of you, you're not hitting those KPIs, your targets, and you've been coached, told how to do it or how to improve. Yeah, I think you just have to go down. I don't like going down that route, but you have to do it. I haven't had to do it often, but I have had to do it, and it's not a nice experience. But end of the day, if you ain't performing, you got to just do what you got to do.
Okay, yeah, it's not a nice thing. I've been a manager before. I'm still a manager now. Unfortunately, I manage family, so I could be a little bit more direct with family. But previously, I've had many difficult conversations. I find I kind of have to gear myself up to have those difficult conversations as well. You have to prepare yourself as best as possible. So I completely understand. And I think that, like you said, the PIP thing helps. And generally, I find there's an underlying factor sometimes why someone's not performing. Could be something going on at home or frustrated with something else in the workplace. Until you find that out, it's the only time you can really help someone, right?
Yeah, and I always show empathy to all the people I work with. Like, I've always asked if everything okay. I always support, help my team. We've all got personal lives. Obviously, people got stuff going on in their personal lives, and yeah, I'm always supporting my team all the time. And yeah, you're right. Sometimes you find that there's a reason why they're not doing it, because something's going on, and it's like, my job is always, I always try to help and support them. Like whatever I can do, I will. But when there isn't something obvious and it's just, sometimes it's people just being lazy or they're just not applying themselves properly, then you just kind of think, do you know what? We have to go down that route. But yeah, like I said, I've been fortunate I haven't had to do it that much, but when I've had to do it, you got to do it.
Good, good. Okay, so let's talk about the future of technology, because AI is apparently going to take all our jobs away. Where do you see the future? Do you think AI has a place at the moment or in the future? Let me know your thoughts on it.
Yeah, look, obviously it's the in thing right now. Obviously a lot of people fearing what that's going to mean for future roles stuff. But at the same time, I think companies will find ways to, even yourself, you've got to invest, I think, yourself some time in learning about it, understanding it, because it will probably come into play in a lot of jobs and roles now. And it could benefit many things, but I don't think it necessarily means everyone's jobs are at threat. But I think find ways to how it can benefit what you do. Look at the capability of it. How can it improve some of the things we're doing? I think it's going to come into a lot of roles, and I think we're going to have to adapt around it. No way can see the future as to, like, I guess, how it's going to be. Obviously, people are speaking about it, speculating, but I think it'll benefit many companies, and I think it will find a way between humans, AI, to kind of work together almost to get the outputs we want. So I think it's an interesting time. I think people should be looking to study into AI and how it works, what it involves, how to use it, because I think it's going to probably become part of a lot of people's roles.
Do you see it being part of the service desk itself?
Yeah. I think there's stuff around automation, like AI bots, there might be a way where you can put AI to deal with some common requests that kind of come in.
Yeah.
Maybe you could put something in where it just kind of could be so smart it can just resolve those without you having to probably do it the kind of manual way you've been doing, where you spend so much time doing it. I think there'll be ways to drive efficiencies with it. I think I definitely see a lot of tools now that are coming that are kind of linking into AI, and companies are exploring it right now. We're exploring it here, and I think I think it's here to stay.
Yeah, I think I've had quite a few good conversations recently around AI. I don't think, and most of the people I talk to don't think, it's going to replace individuals. It's just going to assist individuals, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think it will assist. I don't think it will replace. Yeah. You're still always going to need people, physical people to be on to do roles, but it would be more of an assist than to replace.
Yeah, good. Okay, look, we're kind of coming towards the end of the podcast. I always like to find out a little bit more about you as an individual. Obviously, we touched upon your favourite football team earlier, being Liverpool. Any other kind of hobbies that kind of scream out that you want to talk about?
Obviously, football being the big one. Massive fan, obviously. I love watching, playing football. Out of football, I like sports in general. I like watching different sports, like socialising with friends and family. And obviously, got a wonderful family. Got two kids, two boys that keep me busy. So a lot of my time goes with them. So I think out of kind of work, sport, football, family. Yeah, just general. I guess I'm like everyone else, just busy with life and kids, and they consume you a lot. So
I'm
happy. I'm in a good space.
You've got two boys. I've got three boys. So it's a five-a-side football team now already.
We definitely got to get that game arranged soon.
It's been great having you on, Indy. Is there anything else that you would like to kind of cover off from a services perspective or anything that's notable for our listeners?
Yeah, look, to anyone who is either in a service management role or aspiring to be in a service management role, my advice is, always give 100%. Always be willing to listen, learn, always invest in yourself, and always be asking questions. How can I improve? What can I do better? I think sometimes people can rest on their laurels, but I always feel the real winners, the people that go far, they're always thinking, how do I get better? They're always investing in themselves. They're always developing themselves. And I think IT is such a huge beast. But I think you can't stop learning in this environment. You have to learn about tech, the different things. Yeah, and I just think, look, just keep learning. Keep asking questions. Be curious. And I think you do those things, I reckon you'll be a success in anything you do. So I think if you want to reach out to me, if you want any further advice, help guide us if that's possible on this platform, yeah, feel free to reach out to me. I can always give you my advice on how I feel like I'm always willing to help people. So if anyone wants help on how to get there, I can share my experience further. I'm always willing to help.
Great. Obviously, like you said, tech moves 100 miles an hour, 1,000 miles an hour, right, in the current world. So we do need to learn, develop at all times. And I didn't ask you to say that, but you've put yourself out there as a potential mentor to people. So if you are interested in picking Indy's brains, you can find him on LinkedIn under Indy Bamba. If you're watching the show, you can probably find the link in the comments. And yeah, look him up. But Indy, it's been fantastic having you on. Thank you very, very much. And I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, thanks for your time, Connor. I really appreciate us having this conversation. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity to come on. And I look forward to meeting you soon for a drink.
Me too, 100%. I'll catch up with you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast, Tech Life Stories, sponsored by tech talent staffing firm Russell King Associates. If you like what you hear, please leave a review on the podcast platform you are listening from. If you'd like to hear more from me, you can find me posting daily on LinkedIn, so look me up and connect. Remember, it's not what people think of you when you first start, it's what people think of you when you finish.